The Sunny Side of Sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to The Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. The field is now set for the quarterfinals at the Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Egypt. There will be two matches on Wednesday in Cairo and two matches on Thursday in Suez and Cairo, respectively. Let's take a look at the fixtures. In the first game Wednesday, Senegal will go against Benin, and that will be followed by a match between Nigeria and South Africa. On Thursday, Ivory Coast will play Algeria, and surprise package, Madagascar will meet Tunisia. Madagascar has been the biggest fairy tale story at this 32nd edition of the African Football Showpiece. The Indian Ocean Islanders have shined in their maiden Nations Cup appearance. They beat three-time African champion Nigeria in the group stage, and they've already advanced further in this tournament than host Egypt and defending champion Cameroon, both of whom were knocked out over the weekend. In round of 16 results Monday, Ivory Coast eliminated Mali 1-0 on a goal by Crystal Palace man Wilfried Zaha in the 76th minute. And Tunisia advanced to the quarterfinals by beating Ghana 5-4 on penalty kicks. The Black Stars of Ghana were lucky to even make it to the penalty kick shootout. The Carthage Eagles of Tunisia were just seconds away from winning 1-0 in 90 minutes. But substitute defender Rami Badoui headed the ball into his own net to give the Ghanaians a lifeline. For Nations Cup analysis, this evening we welcome back to the show Segun Mathematical Odegbami, the former captain of Nigeria's national football team. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Odegbami said the matches have proved there are no underdogs in African football.
Well, full of surprises, shocks and surprises, and it just demonstrates how seriously all African countries are taking the game of football now. The issue of minnows no longer exists. You know, the game has become so big, it is so important that even the smaller countries are taking it serious and working very hard to make sure it is well projected. So there is an equalization of the power of national teams in the continent now.
The Confederation of African Football is using the 24-team format for the first time. Do you think that format is justified, given what has happened so far?
Well, absolutely. You can see that the level of participation has thrown open opportunities for teams that ordinarily would not even have come to the championship. And they are the ones that are really surprised the most. So the more teams can play at this level, the better for the game. So this has been a good and successful experiment as far as I'm concerned so far.
Looking at the quarterfinal matches, what's your take on the quarterfinal matches?
Well, my focus really is on two matches only. The one involving Nigeria, of course, that's going to be a titanic battle. It's going to be the most difficult match Nigeria will play, because of the slight psychological advantage that the South Africans have. They played us for over 20 years. The Super Eagles were invincible. And then suddenly, in the past 2 years, they appear to have found an answer. They have defeated the Eagles once and drawn the second one. That is the psychological advantage. The other match is the one that involves Algeria. I have quietly looked at that team since the beginning of the championship. And to me, they are the best team of the championship so far. And yet, nobody is looking at them. They are you know, like the Super Eagles, potential champion. So we are going to see how that will fan out. The other teams, I know Cote d'Ivoire qualified and Tunisia qualified. I think those ones are going to, you know, they are just coming to the party without much hope of winning it. So between Algeria and Nigeria, I see, you know, eventual potential champions.
That's Segun Mathematical Odegbami, the former captain of Nigeria's national football team. And Mathematical Odegbami spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Wasimi, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Let's take a look now at the Nations Cup scoring chart. Right now, four players are tied for the goal-scoring lead with three goals each. They are Odion Ighalo of Nigeria, Sadio Mane of Senegal, Adam Unas of Algeria, and Cedric Bakambu of the Democratic Republic of Congo. The DRC was eliminated by Madagascar in the round of 16. But Nigeria, Senegal, and Algeria have advanced to the quarterfinals. So Ighalo, Mane, and Unas will get at least one more match to add to their total. Possibly add to their total, I should say. More Nations Cup news. The African coaching carousel continues to go around and around and around. Host Egypt has fired Mexican coach Javier Aguirre following the team's shock defeat by South Africa in the round of 16. The 60-year-old Aguirre had 3 years left on his contract. Speaking after Saturday's 1-0 loss to South Africa in Cairo, the Mexican tactician said, and I quote, "Of course I am responsible." And Hani Aboureida, the president of the Egypt Football Association, has also taken responsibility. He's resigned. Meanwhile, the head coaches of Tanzania and Uganda have also stepped down following their team's elimination from the Nations Cup. The Nigerian Emmanuel Amunike, the 1994 African Footballer of the Year, left his position as head coach of the Taifa Stars of Tanzania. The Taifa Stars were making their first Nations Cup appearance in 39 years, and they lost all three of their group matches. And the Frenchman Sebastien Desabre has stepped down as Uganda's coach after a 1-0 loss to Senegal in the round of 16. The 42-year-old Desabre has quickly found a new job, though. He signed a 2-year deal to coach the Egyptian club Pyramids FC. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now let's go to Nairobi, where Kenyans affected by dwarfism are using football to fight stigma. The Short Stature Society of Kenya formed East Africa's first dwarf football team just over a year ago with the hope of turning it into a national league to spread across the region. Sarah Kimani reports from Nairobi.
In Nairobi's city stadium, a football team stretches, jogs, and makes quick fist bumps. 10 minutes later, a referee blows the whistle, marking the start of the first friendly match between Kenya's Lion Stars FC team and the Macmillan FC, made up of under-14s. This is no ordinary game. It is a match between Kenyan dwarfs against a teens club. Ruth Mweni, the chairperson of the Short Stature Society of Kenya, is among the founders of the Lion Stars.
It was a good idea to start it because it creates awareness about us. We need people to know about us. Let us tell a story about ourselves, but not people to tell a story about us.
The Lions lose the game against the under-14s 2-0, but easily take the one against the under-10s 1-0. Lion FC team captain Joseph Maina is happy with his team's progress.
From the look of the games that they have played, I can say that from day to day, my teams, my guys are improving a lot. If we are to complete this journey and hit our target, that is the World Cup Games and the Copa Rabaja in Peru, They have to believe in themselves.
The other teams say they have a worthy opponent, as Joseph Ocheng, the coach for under-14s, explains.
If they can be motivated, they can do very well. Actually, the way they are opening, they are running, I think they have a very good team.
Estimates from Kenya's National Bureau of Statistics indicate that about 3,000 Kenyans are affected by dwarfism. The Short Stature Society of Kenya has just over 600 members. They use sports to come together and fight the stigma often associated with their height. The team, however, has challenges to overcome, as Mweni explains.
In terms of equipment, like the soccer ball that they are using currently, it's not the normal size. Size 4. We have one. We need more.
Apart from soccer, the society has badminton players who will participate next month in a world championship tournament in Geneva. Sarah Kimani for VOA News, Kenya.
Thanks, Sarah. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now let's go to New York City, where the world champion U.S. women's national soccer team will be honored Wednesday with a ticker tape parade. The American women defeated the Netherlands 2-0 on Sunday in the Women's World Cup final in Lyon, France. The AP's Rita Follet reports from New York.
The ticker tape parade is Wednesday in Manhattan. Star forward Megan Rapinoe says, yeah, maybe they were a little slow to start scoring, but they got there.
We're in the World Cup final. It was pretty normal not to score in the first 10 minutes, but I thought our first half was really good, and we just knew in halftime we were like, the next level is there.
Fans, many dressed in red, white, and blue, chanted equal pay at the final whistle. A reminder, the players sued the U.S. Soccer Federation in March, claiming gender discrimination. And Rapinoe ticked off President Trump by saying she would refuse to visit the White House.
We've said, you know, publicly, at least I've said publicly, I think most of the team, if not everybody, I think everybody is with me. We don't want to go to the White House. So I figure that's why the invitation hasn't come. Maybe sent it by mail and it's just sort of slowly to get here. But I doubt it. But I think we will at some point be going to Washington. We've had so much support from so many politicians, from so many people there. You know, just part of the movement. I feel like we're all sort of part of the same movement. So it'd be really exciting eventually when we get there, whenever that happens. I'm not the scheduling genius, so I don't know when that'll happen, but we feel the support from everywhere.
I'm Rita Foley.
Thanks, Rita. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now let's go to Cleveland, Ohio, where the annual Major League Baseball All-Star Game will be played later Tuesday night. The AP's Matt Lodi has this preview for us.
The American League will look for its seventh straight win in the Midsummer Classic as they are the home team for the 90th Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Astros pitcher Justin Verlander will get the start for the American League. Verlander says he's excited to be back on the hill for the American League in a starting role.
I don't take these games for granted. I had the opportunity to go a few years in a row when I was younger. And then I got hurt and missed a few years in a row. And I think it made me appreciate being an All-Star all the more.
Joey Cora's starting lineup will boast three players from the Astros, two Yankees, and one member each from the Indians, Twins, Angels, and Red Sox. The American League leads the overall series against the National League 44-43 with a pair of ties. Matt Lodi, Cleveland.
Thanks, Matt. Still with the Major League Baseball All-Star Game as part of the buildup for the All-Star Contest. They have what's called a home run derby, and let's give a shout out for Pete Alonso, the rookie first baseman for the New York Mets, won the 2019 home run derby, and Pete put on quite a show in Cleveland. And now we turn our attention inside the octagon, where we had a wild series of duels over the weekend between top fighters in the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Brown Daily Herald sports writer and VOA intern Ryan Handel is here to give us the highlights from UFC 239. Sporty greetings, Ryan.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The main card of UFC 239, held Saturday night in Las Vegas in the Western United States, did not disappoint. There were two captivating title fights, yet neither were even the main headline of the evening. That honor belonged to Jorge Gamebred Masvidal, who recorded the fastest knockout in UFC history by putting Ben Askren to sleep in just 5 seconds. Then, Funky Askren entered the fight undefeated in his mixed martial arts career with a record of 19 wins, 0 losses, and 1 no contest. But that undefeated record stands no longer, and neither does Askren. As soon as the fight began, Jorge Masvidal sprinted full speed at Askren and sent a flying knee straight into the side of Askren's head, knocking him out cold. Askren was unconscious about 2 seconds into the fight, but the referee was only fast enough to stop the fight in 5 seconds. Let's hear UFC announcer Bruce Buffer officially give the result.
Ladies and gentlemen, referee Jason Herzog has called a stop to this contest at 5 seconds of the very first round, declaring the winner by knockout, Jorge Gamebred Masvidal.
And that's Bruce Buffer announcing the victory of Jorge Masvidal. Masvidal could potentially have a shot at the UFC welterweight title in his next fight. But to do so, he would have to defeat the imposing African, Kamaru, the Nigerian Nightmare Usman, the current champion of the UFC welterweight division. The two title bouts of UFC 239 were just as entertaining. In the first title fight, Amanda the Lioness Nunez looked to hold on to her women's bantamweight champion status. But giant killer Holly, the Preacher's Daughter, Holm, best known for her dramatic knockout of the formerly undefeated Ronda Rousey, would not go down easily. However, it was Nunez who earned the win via first-round knockout by head kick. Nunez was not as fast as Masvidal. It took her 4 minutes and 10 seconds to get the knockout, but she did enough to keep her title. And in the main event of the evening, John Bones Jones defended his UFC light heavyweight title against Thiago the Sledgehammer Santos. Jones is one of the most dominant UFC fighters ever. He has never lost a title fight, and his only career loss was by a disqualification. Still, Jones had trouble with Santos. Jones took some hard shots early in the fight, but Santos badly injured his knee mid-fight, tearing his ACL, MCL, PCL, and meniscus. The brutally tough Santos fought on, but in his hobbled state, he just couldn't do enough to beat the champion Jones. Jones won the fight via split decision, the first split decision of Jones' storied career. In the other two fights on the UFC 239 main card, Polish fighter Jan Błachowicz upset American Luke Rockhold by knockout, and Michael Chiesa used his superior grappling skills to defeat Diego Sanchez by unanimous decision. It was a fantastic night in Las Vegas, with non-stop action in the octagon.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
Ryan, the National Basketball Association's free agency period is still in full swing. Yesterday on the show, we mentioned the Los Angeles Clippers picked up both Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Ryan, how did the Clippers manage to pull off these acquisitions?
Well, the Clippers were definitely the most attractive destination for Kawhi Leonard. Not only do the Clippers have some great young talent like Montrezl Harrell, Landry Shamet, and Mfiondu Kamengele, but Kawhi grew up in Los Angeles and wanted to come home. The Lakers have dysfunctional management, LeBron James is aging, and Kawhi didn't want to join a so-called super team, so the Clippers were the easy choice of the two LA franchises. When you throw in another superstar like Paul George that the Clippers got in a shrewd deal from the Thunder, Kawhi Leonard couldn't turn the Clippers down.
Ryan, the Clippers certainly look like a dangerous team for years to come after getting Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. What kind of expectations do you have for the Clippers next season?
The Clippers should be title contenders. The NBA is wide open next season, and with these acquisitions, the Clippers have the talent and experience to win it all. The Warriors are a bit weaker without Kevin Durant, and the Raptors are too without Kawhi. The Bucks, Lakers, and 76ers are among several other teams with a title shot, though, so it won't be easy for the Clippers due to so many tough contenders, but don't count them out either.
And Ryan, with the biggest free agents now signed, which players are still on the market?
Well, there aren't any superstars still available, but teams can still pick up some solid role players. Timofey Mozgov, Lance Stevenson, and Tyus Jones are all still up for grabs. So the 2019 NBA landscape isn't set just yet.
Thanks, Ryan. That's Brown Daily Herald sports writer and VOA intern Ryan Handel. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Turning to tennis, the ladies were in the spotlight at Wimbledon on Tuesday. And let's go quickly to the scoreboard. Serena Williams, seven-time champion, has advanced to the semifinals. Serena defeated fellow American Allison Risk. The final score from the grass courts of Wimbledon, 6-4, 4-6, and 6-3. So Serena is through to the Final Four. She'll next play the Czech, Barbara Strakova. Strakova was victorious over local favorite Joanne Konta in straight sets, 7-6 and 6-1. More results from Wimbledon. The other semifinal will feature Simona Halep of Romania against Evelyn Svitolina of Latvia. Final score, Svitolina defeated Kay Muchova 7-5 and 6-4, and Simona Halep was victorious in straight sets over Chinese opponent Zhang Shuai. Final score, 7-6 and 6-1. And let's bring back Ryan Handel for some Wimbledon analysis. Serena, seven-time champion. She's going for a record-tying 24th Grand Slam singles title. Ryan, you think she's the favorite now as we reach the Final Four of Wimbledon?
She's got to be the favorite because it's just on the grass courts of Wimbledon, a player with a power like Serena has can thrive. Although, she shouldn't take Barbara Strakova lightly. She's the unpredictable type of player that could pull off an upset as she's gotten this far. But I still think that Serena has to be the favorite to win it all.
I know, Ryan, you were telling me right before we came into the studio about Serena's legacy at Wimbledon. In addition to those seven singles titles, how many other titles has she won at Wimbledon?
So she's also won six women's doubles titles, and I believe all of those were played with her sister Venus.
Okay.
And she's also won one mixed doubles title. So she's clearly got the talent on both the singles and the doubles courts. She'll take the mixed doubles court later today with British superstar Andy Murray. So I can't wait to see what happens then.
I would imagine the fans at Wimbledon must be pretty excited to see Andy Murray and Serena Williams on the court together.
Yeah, I mean, usually when you see two superstars of that stature on the court at the same time, they're playing against each other. So to see them team up is pretty cool. And also, it's great to see Andy Murray back in action, pain-free after his hip surgery.
And once again, the results from Wimbledon. Serena Williams through to the semifinals. She defeated Allison Risk 6-4, 4-6, and 6-3. Risk, one of the maybe breakthrough players at Wimbledon along with Coco Gauff.
Yeah, Risk showed her resiliency throughout the tournament. She actually, every match she won the entire tournament was three sets. After losing in three sets to Serena today, she played, I believe, five straight three-set matches. So that's some resiliency, overcoming a bunch of deficits throughout the tournament. And even though she's fairly low-ranked right now, I could see her rising up after a performance like this.
And finally, some reaction from Serena Williams with her victory on Tuesday over Allison Risk. Serena says, and I quote, "It was really satisfying. I wouldn't have won that match a couple of weeks ago. She was playing so great," talking about Risk. "She beat so many great players, and she was so close to even taking the win today. I was really pumped. Obviously, it was for a place in the semifinals of Wimbledon." So once again, Serena Williams through once again to the semifinals at Wimbledon. And that wraps up the July 9th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Thomas Blondet. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, historically black colleges and universities in the United States have also educated prominent Africans, like the founding presidents of Nigeria, Ghana, and Malawi. The role of historically black colleges and universities on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers at the California Institute of Technology have discovered a near-Earth orbiting asteroid with the shortest year known for any asteroid in the solar system. Called 2019 LF6, this nearly 1 kilometer-wide rocky asteroid circles the Sun in an elliptical orbit over a 151-day period. The asteroid's orbit takes it from beyond Venus to closer to the Sun than Mercury. 2019 LF6 is known as an Altera asteroid, which are about 20 asteroids whose orbits are contained within Earth's orbit of the Sun. Though the 2019 LF6 is considered a near-Earth object, astronomers have determined that it is not considered potentially hazardous. The Caltech astronomers made their discovery with the Zwicky Transient Facility, a camera that was recently installed on a telescope at the Palomar Observatory near San Diego, California. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Palca.